Backstage with Mothership on Solid Rock Radio begins now. Hear the best in new music, artist interviews, stories from the road, and more. You are now backstage, and here's your host, Mothership.
Hey everybody, this week Joey West of Disciple, just back from the highly successful Winter Jam Tour, is my special guest.
I have Joey West from Disciple. How you doing?
I am doing so good, Cindy. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
How's Tabitha doing?
She's awesome, you know.
Yeah, she is awesome. I see all your posts. I see you're enjoying married life.
Yeah, married life is a lot of fun. It's way different. You know, I got married when I was 33 at the time. So I did 33 years of my life doing what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. No one else's schedule to consider or whatnot. You know, it was just kind of almost kind of nomadic in a way, you know, where I could just take off whenever, you know. As far as touring goes, you know, I used to not miss home. I used to leave and the road was like where I wanted to be. And now that I'm married, the road is, you know, still some place that I like to be, but I prefer home now. So,
but you guys are adorable. I just want to say that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, she's pretty great.
Yes, you both are. For people that don't know, you're an only child and grew up on the coast of the Carolinas, if I remember correctly.
What was the most memorable lesson you learned from your parents? Because you and your parents are like tight.
Oh, man. I don't know that there's like one memorable lesson. My parents are super awesome. We've always had like a really great relationship. I guess being an only child, some people will hear that sometimes be like, oh, you're one of those. Oh, you're an only child. You must be so like, you know, spoiled and all that. And I can honestly say that, sure, I have the only child qualities and stuff that comes out of me every now and then. My parents taught me the value of hard work. They taught me that if you want to keep something, you're going to have to earn it. You're going to have to be respectful. You're going to have to pull your weight around the house. And that all culminated into not letting me grow up that spoiled only child who got his way all the time and all that. So, yeah.
Take us back to your school days and how you got involved in music.
Yeah. So I fell in love with drums when I was 7 years old. That was when I got my first drum kit. And I just loved music. I didn't care what it was. The first CD I ever had was Shania Twain. That had Man, I Feel Like a Woman on it and all that. That was the actual first time I ever saw a CD. And I also was in love with Shania Twain. She was my childhood crush. So I was listening to anything and everything, country music included. Still like country music. But in school, when I was in fifth grade, they offered music class, but it was only orchestra instruments. There was no band class. But I was like, hey, you know what? I get to get away from the classroom that I'm in all day. I get to go learn about music, and I'm just going to play the cello. Sounds like fun. And so I signed up for orchestra class. My parents had to go through the whole process of like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, and then they had to go rent the cello because they're obviously not going to go buy a cello. Those things.
I was going to say, they're probably like, can you just like pick a different instrument? Maybe something a little smaller.
Those things are thousands and thousands of dollars. But luckily we had a local music store that rented out stuff for school orchestra like this. So rented the cello. And I was awful. I just did not care. You know, it was like at the recital, the first recital we had, my parents said that they came and they just kind of had their head in their hands because I was taking the bow and I was hitting it on the cello like it was a drumstick because I wanted to play drums and I did play drums. But I was trying to make the cello into a percussive instrument and that's not how it works. So obviously my parents saw the orchestra thing, the ordeal, and they could tell like he is not committed to this. He is not invested in this. So when I got to sixth grade and I was like, I want to do band. They're like, well, let's look at how the orchestra went. Are you sure? And I was like, oh, absolutely. They got drums now and I'm going to go play drums for the school band. And they were like, okay. Well, if you start this, you cannot quit. You have to fully commit yourself. And so actually that's one of the most valuable lessons I learned from my parents, that saying that
there it is.
And just recalled it is growing up, I played soccer, football, baseball, basketball. And anytime I would start a season, there was no quitting halfway in. If I didn't like it, they made me finish to completion everything. And then they would give me the decision of do you want to continue with this? Do you like it enough to continue, or do you want to stop? But they would never let me quit in the middle. They would only let me quit after my commitment was done. And I said, you know what? I really don't want to do this anymore. They supported whatever I wanted to do. They just would not let me quit when I started something. So that's one of the most valuable lessons I ever learned from my parents. When I got into middle school band, it was kind of the same deal. And got through my first year, and I was like, I freaking love this. You know, like I'm learning a lot.
Was it like drum corps, or was it like band?
So middle school band is more like your concert band, just really simple stuff because you're just learning. But, you know, I was learning how to read music. I was getting to play the snare drum, the bass drum, the mallets, just all this stuff that I didn't even, you know, I only knew of a drum kit. I didn't even know there was a piano in a drumstick version called a marimba and xylophone and bells and all that. Even though I was not really good at that, I still just loved it, you know. And I love the timpani drums because you got to beat the crap out of those things, and I would always like fight for the timpani part. I did band all the way through middle school, and then when I got to high school, that was when marching band came into play. But I did drumline my 10th and 11th grade year. Senior year, I just did not do any band or music class. I wanted to enjoy my senior year. But also, while I was in middle school, I was also taking private lessons with a guy named Paul Riddle, who was the original drummer of the Marshall Tucker Band, which a lot of people will probably know. The Marshall Tucker Band is from Spartanburg, South Carolina, where I grew up most of my life. And as you mentioned before, I am from the coast of South Carolina. I was born in Hilton Head Island, and we lived in Beaufort for a while. And then dad's job moved us to the upstate in Spartanburg when I was like six, I think. I'm right where the Marshall Tucker Band's from, and just so happens the original drummer of Marshall Tucker is family friends of ours. And so I start taking lessons with him. He takes me under his wing. I'm getting trained by one of the best drummers to ever walk the face of the planet. And he's teaching me how to play, you know, Southern rock and all that. I learned so much from this guy. Like, he's just unbelievable. So I had a lot of great music training.
That's amazing. Let's talk about Winter Jam.
Winter Jam. Whew. What a whirlwind. I can't even believe it's over.
Was that crazy or what? How many shows was it?
It was supposed to be 40, but it ended up being 39. One show in Iowa got canceled because of a blizzard that blew through, and it was just unsafe to get the buses there. And and when Iowa is saying it's unsafe, it's definitely unsafe. So, but yeah, 39 shows from January 13th to March 26th was the last one. Every single week was at least three shows in a row, but most of the weeks were four shows in a row, Thursday through Sunday. Yeah, it was nuts.
That's a killer schedule.
Yes, it was great. You know, we got to come home every week of the tour, except the last one, just cause the last four shows were on the West Coast. And since we were already in, I think, Little Rock, Arkansas, we just started making our way out west after that one to get there. Like, we spent Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday getting to the West Coast, and then started playing the last four shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then we made the cross country trek back in the bus from Spokane, Washington to Nashville. The bus never stopped other than for fuel and to eat. That was about it.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. Winter Jam. Like, what do you want to know?
I watched some footage of it, which was amazing. The entire show. You guys brought the energy, maybe a lot more energy than some of the audience, but you always do.
Some of the audiences definitely did not know what to do with us, but, you know, that's okay. We totally expected that. And, you know, like we always say, our music is not made for everybody, and that's okay. We did not expect to go in there and make an entire arena of 9,000 to 10,000 people. Every single one of them love us, you know, because there are people there who want to hear their favorite band, Jeremy Camp and Wilson. That's just like a little bit not our style of music. And they don't like rock at all. But you know, what was awesome about it too, is we got to play in front of people who would typically never come to a Disciple show, and they came up afterwards, and we got this compliment every single night, at minimum, at least once, but I promise it was at least like three or four times a night. People would come up and be like, "Hey, I've never heard of you before, but I love your band now. I don't even like rock music, and you guys just made me a fan." And they've got like an armful of our merch, and they dump it out for us to like sign. And so like for us, that was such a huge compliment, because it was just like, wow, you know, this is really cool. Like, these people have never heard of Disciple, and that 15 minutes made them feel something and fall in love with rock music, and, you know, maybe they'll start listening to us, and then, you know, they'll discover, you know, Decipher Down and, you know, Pillar and Skillet and The Protest and Relentless Flood and, you know, all the other bands that we're surrounded by. Yeah. So I felt like it was a good step forward for Christian rock, you know, just kind of getting the word out there that we're not so big, bad, and scary. You know, we just look and sound scary, but we're actually, you know, huggable people on the other end of that.
I love to see people get introduced to new bands.
Absolutely.
Backstage with Mothership returns after this.
Miller Express LLC is a Solid Rock Radio business ministry partner specializing in delivery, setup, and relocation of storage buildings. More info by calling 803-375-94.
Check us out on Facebook at I'm with Mothership.
It was so amazing from top to bottom. Like the Carswell family who owns Winter Jam was unbelievably good to us. All the people on the tour, all the bands, We the Kingdom, we became really good friends with those guys and their techs. And we would hang out a good bit. Jeremy Camp's been a longtime friend of ours. So getting to see him every night, hang out with his crew was great. And, you know, Andy Mineo, he is an absolute nut. That guy is potentially one of the funniest people I've ever met in my life. And yeah, so like the whole tour was just great. New song, all those guys were great to us. Yeah, I mean, it was a dream tour. You know, I growing up as a Christian music fan, specifically Christian rock fan, I went to Winter Jam starting at about 10 years old. They always came to Greenville, South Carolina. I grew up dreaming of what it would be like to be one of those band members on stage. And I finally got the opportunity to do it this year. And, you know, playing arenas every single night, these massive legendary venues. But yeah, I mean, it was awesome. And we got a chance to play our new song, Promise to Live, out there. And that was also something every single night. There was not a night that it missed. Someone would come up to the table sobbing, saying like, I attempted suicide a month ago and, you know, it's still heavy on my brain. And this song connected with me tonight. Or there's people who are like messaging us after the fact. We got one message from this person after a show. They said, when I went to Winter Jam tonight, I had planned for this to be my last fun thing that I did on earth, because I was going to go to Winter Jam and I was planning to go home and take my life and just go be with Jesus because I was too miserable. And they said that out of the whole night, Promise to Live was the one song that they fully tuned into and connected with. They were literally writing to us, hey, I just want to make a promise to you guys and a promise to myself and a promise to God that I promise to live. I'm going to stick around. And so, I mean, I got goosebumps just retelling that story. But, you know, for all the people who don't enjoy our music or, you know, have, you know, negative things to say, that's totally fine. That's 100% fine. That's their opinion. They're right to say and feel that. But that stuff right there is what reminds me, like, what I'm out here doing is making a difference. Even if it's only in one person out of this whole arena of 10,000 people, if this one person chooses to stay on earth and keep living their life, keep breathing oxygen, I know that we're out here doing a good thing. That's all worth whatever else comes with it, you know? So that the whole tour, I don't even have full-on words for it.
The arena that you sat in at one time and that you got to play that. Tell that story.
Oh my gosh. So when I was 15, 2004, it was Winter Jam. I was at, it's called the Bon Secours Wellness Arena now. It was the Bilo Center back in 2004. And this was back when Winter Jam was, it was a much smaller production then. But, you know, I just remember being 15 years old, sitting there, Reliant K's on stage. I'm, again, you know, just infatuated with drums. And I am just locked in on the drummer for Reliant K. And my mom notices my jaw on the floor and she looks over and she kind of nudges me and she pulled me in close and pointed at the drummer and yelled in my ear. She's like, that's going to be you one day, baby. You know, I'm like, okay, yeah, cool, whatever. Thanks for believing in me, mom. That's never going to happen. But there was something planted in my head that night. It was just like, what if I got good enough at drums and ended up in a band and I played a show here, like in front of my hometown crowd. Yeah, I'm going to do that one day. And I just started believing it. I really did. And I'm not kidding you. Every time I pass by that arena from the time I was 15, I would always say out loud, I'm like, God, let me play there just one time. It all came true on March 11th of this year. I got to play there. I'm walking into my hometown arena to play our set, and I didn't realize Tabitha was filming me from behind, but she caught my reaction in real time when I realized it was sold out. And I was just like overcome with like emotion and just, I cannot even believe I'm here. And so all the shows were special. All the shows meant a lot to me, but there's never going to be anything that tops that ever. I don't think. There was a lot of people where I grew up, people that I was surrounded by for many years that told me I wasn't good enough or that I didn't have what it took to make it in music and that I needed to get a plan B in place and, you know, have a 5-year plan and all that. And these were people who were like supposed like spiritual leaders over me. And so when they told me I didn't have what it takes and that I should just find a plan B, it almost lit a fire in me like, well, I'm going to push even harder just to prove you wrong. When I started touring, I was like, okay, there's one step. And, you know, then and to Disciple, I was like, okay, there's another step. And like playing that arena was just the ultimate, like, what would you like to repeat what you said to me all those years ago? But I'm so glad that those people gave fuel to the fire for me to just work hard and, you know, be like, you know what? Like, I'm not going to let any human determine my destiny. I'm going to let God do that. And I'm just going to be open to whatever he has for me. And I'm going to get as good at drums as I can possibly get. I'm not the best in the world. I know that. There's just all these drummers who can run circles around me. But, you know, at the end of the day, I play drums like Joey plays drums. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the best that Joey can be. And just be open to letting God do what he wants to with me and my drumming talent. He's brought me to this place, you know? And so there's something beautiful in just surrendering that control and not trying to force things or make things happen. I'm just so blessed. Like I can't even explain the gratitude that I have in my heart.
What changes for you when you pick up your sticks and you get on that throne and you sit behind those drums? What is that like?
It definitely is an escape. I will say, because I've been very open and honest about just kind of struggles with anxiety, depression, panic attacks, stuff like that. I've dealt with that for a long time. And it actually hit me on Winter Jam out of nowhere towards the end of the tour. And I mean, so hard that I barely could function. I could barely even walk to the drum kit. But the drums, like for me, like even in those times where I've felt anxious or, you know, depressed or whatnot, there's something about it. When I got behind there, it was just like an escape from real life for a minute to where I could just play, sweat, give all I've got to this performance. Something definitely switches because I've got an insane adrenaline button in my body. Like when my body releases the adrenaline, oh my good Lord, it's like, yeah, my head's about to explode. But I'd say it's different every single night because, you know, sometimes I'm having a rough night. And it's rough mentally in my head. I'm fighting panic attacks on stage. And then there's other nights where I feel as light as a feather and I could just play for 3 or 4 hours if I had to. But I'd say it's just kind of one of those things where it just feels more like an escape than anything. Just from regular life, it's the hour and a half, 2 hours I have to focus on this one thing and just doing it well.
What is the deal with you playing the guitar on Winter Jam? Tell us about that.
Well, so we decided on that at the last moment. We the Kingdom, the guys in the band, Martin, their drummer, is one of my favorite people in the world now. He is an incredible drummer and was so fun to hang out with. But his drum tech, Josh Miner, I became such good friends with him because I'd see him all day every day because he was just in the venue setting up and getting their stuff ready to go, filling up confetti cannons and all that. And me and Josh just hit it off from like day one and became homies. Josh played drums for Jesus Culture, and I think he still does from time to time. He's an amazingly talented dude, and his kids love Disciple. And so every single night of the tour, Josh would watch our show when he didn't have to, and he would FaceTime his kids so they could see Disciple. And they watched us every single night of the tour. And so like the last two nights, I was like, I kind of want to try something right here at the end. I was like, one, how cool would it be for Josh to come up and play drums and his kids get to see him play with Disciple, because I knew he had what it took to play the drum parts. And I was like, and then I was like, I could grab a guitar and go live out every single rock star fantasy I've ever had, like jumping around my bedroom when I was a kid playing air guitar. I was like, I can just go out there and just act a fool. Like, everybody wins in this situation. So I talked to Josh and I was like, how you feel about this? And he's like, oh, I love it. He's like, let's do it. And so we tried it in Portland, which was the night before the last night. And we were just like, you know what? If it doesn't go good, we just won't do it at the last show. Well, we did it in Portland and it went awesome. So we were like, re-rack them. Let's do it again tomorrow night. And so right there at the end of the tour, we did that. And then a couple of the stage hands were like, you guys should have been doing that from the beginning. And I was like, I hate that I had the idea so late into the tour, because had we had the idea sooner, it probably would have been a thing that we did for the entire tour.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was like, hey, I'll grab a guitar. Josh will play drums. His kids will get to see their dad play drums with Disciple. I'm like, this is a huge win.
Everybody wins. Yeah.
And
I love that clip with you trading places with him and spinning your throne to get it the right height while you're still playing.
The reason why we switched back at the end, we only did that on the last night in Portland. I just let him finish the show and all that. But with it being the last night in Spokane, I told him, I was like, I kind of want to be the one to like shut down the drum thing. So it was cool to like switch drums with him, me grab the guitar and then come back and then pick up hitting the drums. And then he grabbed the guitar and went out front and like started hitting it and everything. And so it was just an opportunity for musicians just to have fun. And we did, we really did.
I think it was very entertaining.
And like I said, you know, Josh became an instant friend of mine. So it was just so cool to see him like sit down, never having practiced with us at all. He sat down and crushed the end of Radical the first time on stage in front of 5,000 or 6,000 people.
Wow.
He sat down and just did that. And I'm like, I don't know that I would have done that. I would have required at least two practice sessions with the band beforehand. So
he was just too hyped.
Josh was amazing. He was the most confident dude in the world. And I was like, man, I need to hang out with you more. Like I need that confidence right there. So
check us out on Facebook at I'm with Mothership.
Let's go back. Okay. You know, I think we met the first time when you were with After Edmund back in the day.
Did we meet in After Edmund days?
I think we did.
I know we played Atlanta several times. It's crazy that that was 12 years ago, like 11 years ago now.
But you were with them like a couple of years.
Yeah, I joined up with them in 2011, right before they made their last record, Art and Commerce. And that was the record that I played on and wrote with them.
Love that album still.
Yeah, I go back and listen to it and I'm like,
it was before its time.
Yeah, it really was. Like I go back and listen to it and I'm like, man, had this record come out like 5 or 6 years later, like I think people would have dug it a little bit more. But at the time we were making that, I think Christian rock and Christian rap were like top dogs. And the experimental indie pop stuff just wasn't really hitting. And then all of a sudden that's all it became. It was the indie pop stuff. But man,
I remember us talking together about that was like wrapping up and you were like got asked to play for Disciple. I remember I kind of have a vague recollection about that.
Yeah, that would have been 2013 because that was the last year that After Edmund was a band and I auditioned for Disciple in October of 2013. The After Edmund days were fun. Those guys gave me my first opportunity at touring. I had never toured before and they took a risk on me. They taught me so much and I'm so thankful for them because in the van, I got to see the country. Like, you know, I got to really see everything, you know, like the tour bus I'm very thankful for now, because I do get to sleep. But the only bad thing about a tour bus is you always travel at night and you don't really get to see the country, much anymore. So those van days, I'm so thankful I got to live those.
Didn't After Edmund opened for Disciple?
That's how I got the job with Disciple. Okay. That was like our last tour in America because the last thing After Edmund did as a band was do a tour over in Denmark and in Europe. Yeah, we opened for Disciple like 9 shows and I was a huge Disciple fan, so I was geeking out. And then that was the tour that Trent decided was going to be his last shows with Disciple. And Kevin told me, you know, afterwards that Trent saw me play with After a Minute. Like, he was like watching side stage one night, and he went back to Kevin and he's like, hey man, you need to go watch this drummer. He's like, I think this might be the guy that needs to take my place. And yeah, so my buddy Evan Silver used to be their tour manager. Me and Evan went to church together, so Evan put in a good word for me. And then Kevin talked to me after that tour was over and was just like, hey, what's your plans with After Edmund and all that? And I was like, I think the band's kind of splitting up at the end of the year. He's like, well, he's like, if you don't have anything else on your plate, I'd love for you to come audition. And I was like, heck yeah, son. Like, of course. And so I was one of six that went out for the job with Disciple. And
they made the right choice.
I'm telling you, when I got the audition, when he asked me to audition, I was like, already in my head, I was like, I'm probably not going to get this, but it'll be good experience. You know, so I just worked as hard as I could, made sure I knew all the songs. I'd been playing Disciple songs in my bedroom since I was in middle school anyway, so I was familiar with everything. And then he called me back after all six had been auditioned, and he was like, we'd love for you to go full time at the beginning of 2014. And I just was like, are you kidding me? So yeah, that was how it happened. Just kind of seamless transition between the two. It's so wild to look back on that story now and how all that came to be. And it's crazy how God just kind of lines things up for you and just, you know, takes care of you no matter what.
What's new for Disciple?
We got a new record coming out April 28th, Skeleton Psalm, and it's going to be friggin' awesome. So
nice.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the Patreon?
We do have this fan subscription service basically set up. It's almost kind of like Netflix for Disciple fans on the platform Patreon, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard about. You can go to patreon.com/discipleRocks, and there's several different tiers there that get you access to different content. There's new content every single month. There's also a tier where you get merch item drops every couple months. You get to Zoom call with the band every single month. You get all kind of cool stuff like free tickets to shows, merch store discounts, and every single member of Disciple has their own show that comes out monthly. If you believe in Disciple, if you believe in what we're doing, that is a great way to support us. We've got tiers as low as $1, and we've got a tier as high as $50 a month, and it's all in between. And anything you decide to give or support us with, we are greatly appreciative of. Even if you can't support us financially, prayer, we appreciate that. But I will say, hey, if you do join at a $1 tier, you get 3 full acoustic albums for that $1, which, I mean, I don't know that you could get a better deal than that by paying $1 and getting 3 full albums full of acoustic songs performed by us of popular Disciple songs. So it's definitely the best value for a dollar in the year 2023.
Okay, I gotta ask.
What snack disappears on the bus the fastest?
Lainey Conway, you know her?
Yeah, I know Lainey.
She brings what we call
those crack donuts. Yes. I knew that was coming.
Yeah, she brings us these donuts that are made by like from Amish country. Mm-hmm. And they're like these powdered donuts. It's like cinnamon or something. She brings those up on the bus and they are gone the next day, mostly because of me. Like, I will wake up in the middle of the night, go use the bathroom, and they're just sitting on the kitchen table. And as I walk by, I can legitimately hear them audibly say, Joey, are you hungry? Yeah. Come feast. And I will sit there at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, just completely like bedhead, my eyes just barely open, and I'm just sitting there just eating donut after donut because they're so good. Like, I would say those disappear by far the fastest. And then second to that is if we have any kind of cereal on the bus, like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Frosted Flakes, like everybody loves cereal on our bus. So we crush some cereal.
Before we go,
I want to remind you the time at City Rock Fest when I came to a show the night before I was having emergency surgery for my spine.
I had a
spine surgery that I got an infection in the incision area, and they were going to have to go in and take a hunk of my back out. And they said they're going to take the spacer they had just put in out, and that they would have to like do the surgery all over again after I healed and all this. And I was a basket case, but I came to see City Rock Fest that night because I wanted to come worship before I had surgery the next morning.
Right.
And I tell you, the musicians, you know, you guys all rallied around me, and I just never will forget you, Joey West. I want people to know this, that you chased me out into the parking lot to pray for me, and how much that meant to me, because God did answer that prayer.
Yeah.
And even though I remember you saying that I don't speak very well, I don't pray very well. I can't remember how you said it.
I remember that very well. I actually remember that very well.
Had the surgery, and they told me, we don't know why, but the infection was closer to the surface and your muscles were protecting the spacer that we put in, so it was not contaminated.
Oh.
I just heard my head, hedge of protection.
Oh, well, I'm honored that I got to be a small part of that. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. Like, I'm not distraught when somebody asked me to pray at something or whatnot. Who was it in the Bible that stuttered? Moses?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm like, get ready to just hear me stumble all over my words. But yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up. That's really cool that I got to be a part of that. So
yeah, it was just so precious. But I just want people to know the kind of guy you are, and I appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you. That really means a lot. Love you too. Thank you for all you do for all the bands out there and taking care of us and the banana pudding. Keep it coming.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Cindy. Yeah, thanks for having me. This was fun. Well, hopefully I'll see you at a Disciple show sometime this year.
Yeah, at least see you in Germany.
Yes. Yeah, stoked about that. All right, sounds good.
All right, good night.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more great music. And check out my blog page on the Solid Rock Radio website for my guests' social media links. If you've missed any of my past interviews, you can find them uploaded to podcast.solidrockradio.org. Have a wonderful week, and let's be kind to one another.